You're listening to Captain John Doe. Real aviation stories told anonymously. Let's get into it.
Welcome back, everybody, to a very, very windy Wednesday in Las Vegas. I am happy to be sharing another episode of the Captain John Doe podcast as your favorite host, assisted by my lovely, beautiful wife, Mindy. Oh, yeah.
I'm just the assistant. That's right. You know what's funny? Our listeners are the freaking best. I've gotten so many messages about your support or lack of support as the self-proclaimed favorite host.
Listen.
Everyone's in on the bit.
And everyone knows.
I love it.
That I'm not doing much here. Okay. Literally last week's episode, you just carried the whole weight. We know. But you know what? I'm going to try to do a little bit better this week.
No, you are a great host. You are a great host.
But I don't provide a lot of added value outside of my voice.
That's okay. That's all the people here. That's all they care about. I do all the nitty gritty that no one wants to hear about. It's a thankless job, you know?
I get thanked a lot lately.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know what you're talking about.
This reminds me of all of my middle school and high school days of being in group projects.
I knew you were going to say this.
Really? Where?
Because I know what part I played.
And I know what part I played. And it continues to this day where in a group project, i.e. me and you working on this podcast together, I do all the work and everybody else gets all the credit. That was my whole high school experience.
Listen, when you said I do, you signed up to go the whole finish line with me.
And what was your experience in high school in group projects?
I say this with regret. I was a baseball player my entire life. Most of my schooling was procured in a very manicured process.
Yeah, you were a jerk. We get it. You were a jerk jock.
I was not a jerk. I've never been a jerk.
No.
But I had a lot of help.
But it's jerk behavior to be in a group project and not participate.
I didn't mind doing science projects in a group, but if we were doing a PowerPoint.
Exactly. No one wants to do a PowerPoint, but someone had to do it.
And guess who the someone is?
It was me.
Yeah.
Always me.
Because you did it better than anyone else.
No, that's a sorry excuse.
But it's true.
People don't want to do it. Anyway, we just got to do like a very husband and wife moment right there. Okay. Speaking of husband and wife.
Oh, we're good in the good little leeway there.
I got to take my husband to work.
Oh.
Take you to work. So what is really amazing about my career is that it's like running my own business. I make my own schedule. I schedule my own photo shoots for my aircraft listings. If you guys don't know, I'm an aircraft broker. I help people buy and sell airplanes. And so as I'm traveling to meet clients, I utilize our own aircraft, who we call Mojo. You may have heard that on the podcast. It's a Cessna 182A. And what's really amazing about that is the luxury of doing what I want when I want to. Obviously, I like to make it happen in a timely manner, but when I'm able to line up my work trips, when Kevin is off of his work, it's amazing for several reasons. Because then we're traveling in our airplane together, which we both love. It's our favorite thing to do. We turn what would be a really like boring, tough work trip for me into a little mini workcation, which I love.
I like that word.
And then instead of me grinding, flying 2 hours to see a client, do my work, fly 2 hours home by myself, whatever, which I do all the time and it's fine. Instead, we go the night before, we get a nice hotel room, we have a nice steak dinner. And then the next day, I have your help. And it makes my work go a lot faster because I have trained you on how to scan logbooks for me.
That's true.
So while I'm getting the photos and everything, you are scanning logbooks and I get my work done in half the time. So you're actually useful.
I think what I was most useful in this latest adventure is I don't want to use the word distracting your customer, but like keeping him entertained while you were trying to do all the listing photos.
That's right.
Which was really important, I think.
Right. No, it is, because if I'm by myself and I'm trying to take the photos, and I don't mind this at all, it just slows down the process.
Yeah, that's
my clients are right there on my shoulder and they want to talk to me and stuff. And I'm like, can you scoot 2 feet back? You're in the frame. So it does help whenever you come, because you talk to them and do distract them while I take an hour to get all the photos done. So
I thought that this last listing, I mean, you knocked that out quick.
We did two in one day. We finished them all in 3.5 hours.
I got carpal tunnel from the amount of pictures I was scanning. Gosh,
Kevin.
Oh my gosh.
You're so lazy. So lazy.
It was a privilege and an honor to be on workcation with Schmin Schwan.
Yes, you got to get whisked away on this fun little thing and sit on a couch and take photos of logbooks while I was doing yoga inside of tiny aircraft cabins. And I'm in the plane, out of the plane, in the plane, out of the plane, shut this door, open this door, get to the back seat, get to the front seat. My back was totally fried at the end of this 3.5 hours from doing all of that.
You got your gym workout in. I don't know what you're complaining about. You always want to get to gym.
No. I don't know what you're complaining about.
I'm not complaining.
You just complained. You said
I'm just stating facts. Just stating facts.
Okay, so to wrap this up, I took Kevin with me to Arizona. It was in the Phoenix area. And another perk of this, as you guys know, Kevin is building time. And another reason why I was really dedicated to make this work was so that he could get the hours as we flew our airplane to these clients while he was off. So
hashtag no days off.
No days off. So that really helped. You got several extra flight hours while I get to fly my plane for my work, while I'm writing it off against my business. It's a triple whammy.
Triple whammy. It was a very useful trip.
I would like
to do this more.
So we finished up so quickly in Phoenix, unexpectedly, and had one more day off to play with. So instead of going back to Las Vegas, we knew that the Buckeye Fly-In was happening, which is just on the very west side of Phoenix. And we were at Falcon Field, FFZ, in Phoenix. So we finished up there and we're like, let's head to Buckeye. We were totally unprepared. When we left Las Vegas, we were not planning to go to this air show at all, because I thought that the work was going to take a lot longer in Phoenix, but we knocked it out. And then we flew to Buckeye and we flew into an air show, which was fun. It's the first one of 2026 for us. Landed, we parked in the dirt. Here's what I don't recommend. Do not have a polished airplane like us fly through rain and then land in a dust bowl.
Yeah.
Because that's what we did. And our plane was wrecked.
4 days after getting it polished.
Yes. But it was really fun. We flew in. We had no issues. Normally when you fly into air shows, it's a zoo. I'll tell you, it was way harder flying into Falcon Field than it was flying into the Buckeye Air Show.
Great point.
Yeah, right.
Falcon was a mess.
Yeah.
I don't know why people get scared of other airports. Be scared of Falcon Field.
Be scared of any Phoenix area airport. All of the Phoenix.
Just like I know we're backtracking here, but when we got on the ground, like we kind of had a quick debrief, like really happy we were both here, because that was a lot.
Yes.
Like a lot. A lot.
Yes. So then we went to Buckeye. What did you think of Buckeye?
Well, I love air shows, so I'm going to start it with, no matter what the experience was, I was happy to be there. I'd say on the scale of fly-ins and air shows, it was more pointed towards like the local residents.
Gen Pop.
Yeah, like it was great. I mean, I enjoyed it. They had a ton of vendors there. The air show itself was only about an hour and a half long. And so it was definitely more focused at the local Buckeye residents, not necessarily your local or your out of town GA pilots. But it still was really fun to go and at least kind of see.
Being really nice. Do you want me to be honest?
You can say what you want.
To be honest, I'm not going to shit on it, but I'm going to be honest.
Go ahead.
You said that in a very nice PR way, which I appreciate. That means all my training to you is rubbed off.
Thank you.
But I'm just going to be honest here. And it's not that Buckeye did a bad job putting the show on. This is because we are so freaking spoiled. Mm-hmm. We are so spoiled. Anyone listening, if you've been to Sun and Fun or Oshkosh, you are in the same boat as us, where your air show expectations are high. You want to see the Thunderbirds. You want to see the Blue Angels. You want to see the top performers in the Red Bull sector. You want to see helicopters flying upside down. You want to see Kevin Coleman 3 feet upside down above a runway.
While you're waiting in the water at Pensacola Beach.
Mike Goulian, you know, tumbling out of the sky. Buckeye's like top performer was a glider.
Which was really awesome, by the way. It was amazing.
I'm not shitting on it. I'm just saying we are very spoiled. And it was the, it was actually really awesome because it was sent by the Air Force, whatchamacallit, the U.S. Air Force Academy.
Yes.
It was a college student. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. But like when you're used to seeing, you know, F-18s do sneak passes and barrel rolls in front of you, you're like, oh. And I'll say everyone at the air show was impressed.
Yeah.
Like we could hear all the gen pop around us in the stands and they were like, oh my gosh, is there a person in that glider? Is there a real person in there? Is that... And it has no engine.
I'll give the honest opinion. It felt more like a county fair.
Yes.
But not knocking on it. Like, it was still an awesome event. But like Mindy says, when you go to Sun and Fun and Oshkosh and the Pensacola Beach Air Show, it's like...
We're spoiled.
Can't top that. And then also, no knock on us desert dwellers, but there's just dust. Like, tons of dust. I mean, the kids' playground area was comical because, like, they're playing on rocks.
Dirt. And then...
What?
I've got to say this.
What?
This is not their fault.
What?
It smelled like manure.
Yeah, there. So... That what they did excellent is they had more porta potties than people.
Bathroom situation 10 out of 10 for air show. And I didn't go into one porta potty that was nasty. They were all clean.
Perfectly nice. Clean.
And I don't even know that the porta potties was generating the smell.
I don't know. I didn't know where we were, to
when
be honest.
When we landed and we opened our windows as we're taxiing in, I looked at Kevin and I said, do you smell that? And I looked at you and you said, I swear I didn't crap my pants. So I was like, I wasn't thinking that until now. And then we got out and the smell was worse. And I was like, wow, maybe there's some cows around. Nope, no cows around. Don't know where the smell is coming from. And then we spent the night. We went back to the air show the next morning and the manure smell was in full force. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even have breakfast there. It was such a bad smell.
It was pungent.
It was so bad. And then we saw one of our friends and I was like, is it just us or do you smell this? He's like, oh, I'm so happy you said that because I was smelling it too. And he's like, I didn't know if it was just me. I'm like, no, not just you. It's pretty disgusting.
Well, guess what? We can say we went to the Buckeye Air Show in Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, I have one more thing to say.
Go ahead.
About it.
Sorry.
We did not stay for the night air show.
We did not. Well, a lot of people told us that the night air show was up to par of Oshkosh, which...
There's no way.
That's a lie.
I'm sorry.
But to be fair, some of the producers or, I don't know, organizations that are involved in the Oshkosh air show were also involved in Buckeye. So like the drones and like all the fireworks. So a lot of the Buckeye residents were saying all the fireworks that hadn't been sold for the year were going to be blasted off. So we did not get to see the night air show because I had to go back to work. So we can't give our opinion on that.
Maybe we should have stayed for that.
Yeah.
Again, I have a bad time. I am just keeping it real.
Positives. The efficiency of getting in and out. Oh, my gosh.
We got in and out of a fly-in. And they had a temp. It's a non-towered airport. And they had a temporary tower up with a very easy procedure to get in. You just flew over a VOR. Pointed towards the airfield, called tower, and they told you to make a left or a right downwind.
How many planes would you say were parked?
Oh, God. I don't know.
It was a good amount. I was going to say 200. There was a lot of people there. So like the efficiency was unbelievable.
They did phenomenal. We got in and out of Buckeye quicker than we do at our home airport or any other airport that we're in and out of. We filmed going in and out of Buckeye, by the way. So catch us on our YouTube channel in a couple weeks. But when we flew out of Buckeye, I turned on the camera on our wing prior to engine start. We started up, taxied out, did a run up off the ground, and we're passing through 8,000 feet. And when I turned off the camera, it was at 16 minutes.
It's impressive.
At 8,000 feet.
Cruising.
That's how fast they got us out of there.
Yeah.
So kudos to the temporary tower there, and just the procedures that they put in place were incredibly efficient, and I much appreciate that. But no, it was a great time. I'm glad that it was on our way home. It was something that we could stop in and do and be a part of some more GA stuff. Would you be honest, if you were like two states away, would you fly in for that?
Now being there, no, and not necessarily because of the air show, just because of the location. Like, I would rather, if I'm going to be that far away, have something else to do outside of the air show. If we're going to,
it was like, in the middle of nowhere.
It's Phoenix, but it's not Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not even close. Like, when we took off from Falcon Field, I mapped it. It was a 2-hour drive from Falcon to Buckeye.
Oh yeah, it's over an hour drive to downtown Phoenix.
It's not close,
at least. And it's way out in the, like, you feel like you are in the middle of the desert.
The hotel in Buckeye was 15 minutes from the airport alone, which thankfully, like I said, the city of Buckeye was amazing. They provided free shuttles for us to go back and forth.
Because there's no Ubers way out there.
Yeah. So, like, back to your question, if I'm flying, you know, more than a fuel stop away, I don't know if I would do it.
Yeah.
But we were... If quick it's little hop. I mean, it was an hour flight for us. Like, that's nothing.
But you're right. So we got in the night before and we checked in our hotel. We're like, okay, we're in the middle of nowhere. Let's go to dinner. The top options on Yelp was McDonald's, Wendy's, and Cracker Barrel.
Literally.
And we're like, okay, Cracker Barrel it is. That's the only place we can go have a sit-down dinner. Hey. And that was, you know, meh.
Like,
and
Cracker Barrel sponsored me.
And then just to put a bow on that, I had to pay $400 for that hotel room.
Yeah, you did.
400 buckaroos for a Hilton room.
Home two suites.
Yeah.
So if we're still here next year, maybe we'll go back.
Yeah. Well, that's less than a fuel stop away.
Yeah.
But next time, would you camp? I didn't even see the camping area. Did you?
It was right next to where we parked.
I don't think I would camp. There, I would camp on top of rocks.
It's all rocks and dust.
Oh, can you imagine sleeping in the dust and like, the manure?
Because I wanted to say yes, but like there's no grass. I mean, we're used to it now, but it still feels weird.
Well, obviously we have infinite stories to share, but we want to hear your stories. So remember, as we're getting into this, we read anonymous stories and we would love to hear yours. Anything in aviation goes. Tell us your air show stories. I know that some of the greatest hangar stories over a beer is flying in and out of Oshkosh or Sun and Fun.
The Fisk arrival. It's got you, hasn't it? So many people reach out or you see in passing, have you ever done the Fisk arrival?
And they have horror stories about it, and I want to hear it. I want to hear it. I know so many people have air show stories. Maybe not even just flying in, but being at an air show. What did you see? What happened?
Nah.
What kind of drama was going on at the air show line? We want to know. So if you have a good story, go to CaptainJohnDoe.com. It's fully anonymous. That's the best part about this. So really air out your dirty laundry.
Do it. I know there's some people listening that I've had a chat about to give us their stories. They're anonymous. Don't worry about your employer.
Yeah, don't name your employer. We're not trying to we're not trying to do anything bad for aviation here. We're just trying to have a good time.
Well, we have our own reputations to keep up. We're not trying to harm anything. We just want some fun stories to share. Feel free. We are not, listen to the podcast. We do not name names here. The only people we name is when they tell us specifically they want their name on the podcast.
Right. So head there. a new segment that we have of our show, of most episodes now, is our advice section. So if you don't have stories yet, maybe you're looking for advice. Maybe you're a student pilot, or maybe you're looking for your first job. Maybe you're considering a career change and you just want to pass a question at us. Go to the website, CaptainJohnDoe.com, and there's an option that says, I want to ask for advice, and write into us. And that's a new segment of our show. So we have one of those today as well. Also, a reminder that next week we are announcing our February winner for merch. Why did you just look funny?
I was just reading.
Reading what?
I'm just thinking about
what?
Nothing.
What just got you?
Well, everyone listening, I've been trying to put together like a little flow for us to do like our clerical work, and I cannot spell. I spelled thus and months. I don't even know what I was trying to say there. And I started laughing when you read it because you did it so good. And I'm like, what did I even write?
Anywho, Kevin is listening in just like you guys are.
But I wrote it.
But our host, and our favorite host, is just going to sit there.
I wrote these words.
Anyways, if you guys are listening to this episode on time, then you still have time to enter the merch drawing. And if you're listening to it later, that's okay too, because every month in the year of 2026, we are giving away free merch. So be sure to enter. You can do that by heading to our Instagram, which is the Captain John Doe Podcast Instagram. And there will be a post on there that gives you all the details. And if you comment on the post, you have an entry automatically to the drawing. And then our link in bio on Instagram or CaptainJohnDoe.com has all the rules. It's open to U.S. residents 18 and older. And there's an extra way to get an entry.
Ooh.
Ooh. And we actually keep a separate list. So it really is a double entry. You can have more than one entry. And that is by submitting reviews. That is so important to us. We don't ask a lot from you guys. We don't even have the option for you guys to pay us if you wanted to. We don't have a Patreon or anything like that. We're doing this as a passion project right now. We're a little early to have full sponsorships. It's growing fast and we're starting to get there. But a way you can support us for free is to leave a review. That's so important to us.
And speaking of reviews, as always, we've been reading two every single week. What I really like is these ridiculous names.
And these are on Apple Podcast reviews,
right? The ones I'm going through right now. We haven't even got to Spotify or any other apps. Okay. Because they're coming in because they want that merch.
Love it.
So Benny and the Jets said, laughable communication, 5 stars. Aviation has a nasty connotation for not being able to report stories or experience without the possibility of penalties. I've looked high and low for an aviation podcast that was made within this decade to listen to that has real broad experiences that bring laughter, stories that have a critical perspectives, and experiences that can help me not only get through the day, but potentially improve my decision making. This is that podcast. Love the episodes. Keep it up.
Thank you, Ben.
That is an excellent review.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Pure Imagination, The Wednesday Ritual, 5 stars.
That's what their name is called?
Pure Imagination.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Pure Imagination said, I've been a fan and follower of Mindy and Kevin for a handful of years now. Wow, I got included in there. It's weird. It's been great making their podcast a part of my drive to and from work on Wednesdays. It's a habit for me, and I'm always looking forward to it. From talking about the McMonster to Kevin's suits. There's always hilarious personal anecdotes on top of great stories found and submitted by other listeners. Cheers, y'all. Keep up the great work. Can't wait for more.
I love it. Thank you. And thank you to our awesome community of people that are submitting stories. That's what makes this work. It makes it so exciting for us and for everyone else listening. So if you're contributing, thank you.
And we look forward to more McMonster stories.
Oh, yeah, that was a really good one. That was what, like 10 or 15 episodes?
That's a while ago.
It's in the title. You guys should go find that one. That's one of the best stories we've told on the podcast.
Yes. Yes. And I actually know who submitted that. So I'm not, but they reached out to me and it makes it even better.
I'd say it's such a small amount of people that reach out to us.
It is true.
That it was their story.
We're not asking you to.
No. Don't. Please. I don't want to be liable for any of what you guys tell us. I really don't. But I just assumed that more people would reach out and be like, oh my God, I heard my story on your podcast today. Mine was the McMonster one or whatever.
Yeah.
It rarely happens where people own up to it. So I love it. I love, love, love that you guys are keeping it anonymous. I don't mind if you message me, but like, yeah. I love that it's not. Like, it's really fun.
All right, I'm going to get into our first listener submitted story. So they said, since you're on the subject of crash pads, I need to share a great crash pad story.
That's because we had an episode early on, actually, about crash pads. Also a great one.
Yeah. I was based in Newark with my regional airline in the late 2000s. My landlords had leased a very nice house in an area close to the airport. After about a year or so, the owner of the house decided he was going to move back in. However, he agreed to allow the house to remain as a crash pad. I arrived one evening after my commute into base to get ready for my trip the next morning. I arrived at the house to find it was just myself and the owner. I introduced myself and he seemed like a very nice guy. I proceeded to sit in the living room off to the side and eat my dinner and check the internet for a little bit. After about 30 minutes or so, friends, maybe associates, of the owner started arriving for the evening. Let's just say things got interesting. They started playing cards and drinking around the dining room table and seemed oblivious to the fact that I was sitting there. I don't recall what all the conversation was, but I distinctly remember one of the guys asking, "When do the bitches get there?" It was like a scene out of Sopranos. I'm still not convinced I was sitting there with New Jersey businessmen. I immediately went into my room and barricaded the door with my suitcase. I slept as best I could that night. I left the next morning for my trip and called my landlord from the terminal and advised him I would be moving out immediately and I wouldn't be paying any penalty. Crash pads are not for the faint of heart for sure.
I feel like there's so much more to this story that they didn't tell us.
My question here is this a Captain Jane Doe, potentially? Or
what
Captain
made
John
you
Doe?
Think it was a Jane Doe?
I just don't know. I don't know.
No.
Because when they wrote, "When do the bitches get there?" they put a little asterisk there. I don't know. Maybe a guy would write that. I don't know. Question mark. But we need to know more because the Sopranos innuendos here gets me extremely excited. Like when I was reading The Businessman, and for those of you that don't know, they're talking about the mob. Like yes. There's she or he is talking that the mob was eating dinner while they were trying to get ready for their trip the next morning.
And, you know, I'm just going to say, normally, the neighborhoods that are really close to major airports are usually not the best neighborhoods.
Correct, because people don't want to live by airports.
Yeah, especially the major airports. It's usually the tough part of town, right?
The businessman part of town.
Yeah, and they said that this was an area very close to the airport, said it was a very nice house. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, you get those gut feelings when you're traveling that you cannot dismiss. And even though there's nothing in this story that on paper says, like, they have a case, right? You have those gut feelings and you're like, I am out of here. Have you ever feel like you need to barricade your door at night?
Just take a step back, though. They were there for a whole year. Like, I would be a little bit taken aback, too, after commuting to this crash pad for a whole year, that's a long time. And then all of a sudden,
the owner moves.
Just poof, out of nowhere, the owner's back. And then the first day, the owner comes back.
So strange.
You have a little mob boss meeting. Like, was it calculated by the owner? Like, who knows?
That's really strange. As in, like, if I was the owner of a house, I would never want random strangers in and out of one of my bedrooms.
No.
Especially if I had the mob over for dinner.
Especially, Mindy. Especially.
I'd want some privacy.
That's the local Newark mob.
I'd want some privacy, you know?
We want privacy. So, based off all of these crash pad stories, am I going to get a crash pad?
Hell no. I'm sorry. We are past that. If we were freshly out of college and 23 and just trying to make it, I'd say, sorry, sweetheart, but you need to get in a crash pad.
So we're going hotels?
Yeah, luckily we're past that point, I think. I've already invested a lot into this career of yours.
I snorted.
And you know what? I'm going to keep supporting that dream of yours, because I do not want you writing into our show about a bad crash pad story, because I feel like 9 out of 10 times something weird's happened.
I can't imagine it ever is, you know, daisies and roses.
What would be the best case scenario for a crash pad?
I would say a house that you went to school with the other individuals.
Okay.
And that's who you're sharing it with. So people you already are familiar with. Obviously, the owner is not around, because that seems like it's going to throw a huge wrench into play.
What about the bedroom and bed situation? And how many people?
I would really prefer my own bedroom. I can deal with...
That's untouched when you're not there.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like, based on these stories, we know nothing, by the way. Like, we only know what you guys are sharing with us. So it seems like there's hot beds and cold beds and whatever beds. So, like, if I had a crash pad, I would want that room to be mine.
I think that's very unlikely.
Yeah.
Because it seems like crash pads are meant to be cheap. And the way to make them cheap is you put two sets of bunk beds in a singular bedroom.
I could get away with a bunk mate, like I said, but... I'm trying to put myself in the shoes, but I don't know. Like, are you making friends with these other people, or are you not seeing them enough?
No, I don't think you're ever seeing them. It's just, who do you want in your sphere? Who do you want in your space?
Yeah.
Even when you're not around, who's there?
Who's
unlocking the door for other people to get in? And like, it's not like you're really keeping stuff there. So it's not a worry about people stealing stuff.
So I guess this is the closest thing I can relate. When I did my multi-commercial, they kind of put me in a quote-unquote crash pad in Ohio with a random person in a random house. And it was fine.
You had your own bedroom.
I had my own bedroom. I had some random people at times that would come in and out. But overall, like, I can understand how you can get over that pretty quickly. But it was definitely odd.
I also think that you have a luxury of being able to do a crash pad if you wanted to, or a housing situation like that. Because being a young female, there's so much more to consider with strangers coming in and out of your sleeping space.
Yeah.
Especially in a co-ed situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, or not. Imagine the wrong person learns about an all-female flight attendant, pilot, living situation. How bad that could be, right?
And we're just going to start like a CS, what is that thing? SCI? No, I don't know. An investigation of crash pads. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I don't want bad things to happen to people.
No,
I'm just saying bad things do happen. And as a young female who travels solo a lot, I am very, very aware of my surroundings and not putting myself in situations that could be dangerous. Because, I mean, any young female is going to relate to this, that things get scary really fast when you're by yourself. And I think that the idea of crash pads, of strangers coming in and out, and anyone unlocking the door for anyone, not everyone has your same judgment. So even if I'm in an all-girls room and one of these flight attendants goes out to a bar and wants to bring a guy back, I don't trust her judgment and who she's bringing back. And, oh, he wants to bring his two buddies, and then I'm sleeping in the bunk bed in the same room, and then all of a sudden there's three grown men.
You wouldn't sleep a second.
There's three grown men in my space all of a sudden. Not happening.
No.
No, you had to draw the line somewhere. So, yeah, hotels are more expensive, but it is what it is. I'm not getting in that situation.
Keep the crash pad stories coming. I like them.
Sorry, I get so scared. I have my own stories I could submit about traveling, not crash pads, but hotel and safety and all this stuff. It's not good stories, though. So
no, I don't like those stories.
Yeah, maybe we won't tell them. But I feel like it's important to share bad experiences so that other people can travel smarter.
Yeah.
I'll leave everybody on this. If you type in door wedge on Amazon, don't laugh. If you type in door wedge, there's these like bright colored plastic door wedges. They're a triangle. The bottom of it has like some rubber on it, and they're like these like hard plastic. Mine is like a bright blue color. Like you'll see them. They're like bright green, bright pink, whatever. That's how you know it's the right one. I travel with that to every single place I stay. It's a small thing. It just stays in my suitcase 100% of the time, but I shove it under the door at hotel rooms because hotel room doors are very not secure. This goes for men and women. You don't want someone coming in your room at night, and it's very easy for people to get in. Very easy, scary easy. Mm-hmm. So I have this door wedge thing, and no matter how much weight you put against that thing, you cannot open the freaking door.
I've tested it.
As have I. A lot of people have. That's their whole shtick. And it also is like a protection tool too, because it's a pretty sharp triangle,
yeah.
I'll say. So if I could give one piece of advice before we get to our advice section, everybody go on Amazon right now and buy it. And if you can't find it, I think it's linked on my Instagram bio. I have a Amazon storefront. Just you'll find it. It's in there. Anyway. So you ready for my story?
Hit me with it.
Okay. Another listener submitted story. So I was a newly minted private pilot and wanted to take my wife up on a flight. I'm in western Kansas, where if the wind is less than 20 knots, we consider it a calm day. This made finding a day that wouldn't be too rough difficult. At last, the day came. I told her to meet me at the airport at 6. We grab the key and go to the hangar and begin pre-flighting the 172. As I'm doing the walk around, I notice a small drip on the ground by the left brake caliper. I didn't think much of it at the time, as it was a flight school plane, and we're very spoiled to have very nice planes here. And a drip here and there is kind of unusual, but still, it's a 45-year-old Skyhawk. We pull the plane out and proceed to hop in. Then the in-cabin checklist has me checking the brakes as one of the first few steps, which I did, and I had ample brake pressure. Meanwhile, the wife gets all strapped in and ready, making sure to take her motion sickness pill in the process, and they make her very drowsy. I proceeded through the checklist to engine start. It was at this point I thought to myself, I better check the brakes again after noticing that drop. So I depressed the brakes again. And again, I have good pressure, but I see another drip. So I pushed a little harder. Boom. Brake fluid went everywhere. The bottom of the wing looked like Bob Ross had flicked a red paintbrush at the underside to make a happy little mess. Needless to say, the wife was very unhappy, as she's already nervous to fly, and having the airplane brake on the first attempt didn't help that much. On the plus side, I got to have a very quiet evening, as the motion pill she took had her asleep by 7:30. We did end up getting to fly a couple weeks later, and all went well. Fortunately, this experience, though, taught me to check everything again if there's even a hint of doubt in your mind.
First immediate thought is like, well done. I mean, that like you had this feeling. Right. Obviously, your wife being there may have caused you to second guess everything, or maybe not. Maybe you just had phenomenal training to notice that a drip under the brake caliper is a little abnormal. I've yes. never seen that, honestly. So you checking the brakes multiple times, well done. Well done.
Also, that goes to say something to be said about pre-flighting in the hangar. And I'm going to call you out right now, Kevin.
Here we go.
You fly out of a very fancy flight school mm-hmm. that has line guys that bring the aircraft out on the ramp for you at your scheduled time. usually, right?
Yeah.
So if there was a drop of brake fluid on the ground, it would be impossible for you to know.
Where are you getting here? Because I can elaborate on this a lot.
I'm just saying that the luxuries that we look for sometimes can prohibit our information gathering during pre-flight.
Let me get on my rant real quick, and I am not knocking my company. We are the best company in the world. But there are such simple things that every pilot has to do in their training that our pilots do not do. And I'll explain.
I think did we talk about this?
They never have to fuel the airplane. They never have to tie down the airplane. They never have to pull out the airplane.
Tow it with the tow bar or a tug, anything.
And these simple things, I know that some of you guys are listening to this being like, that is ridiculous that you don't do that. Like I said, like Minnie said, we're at a very, very amazing school. But it dawned on me like 6 months ago that I have to teach these kids how to go to the gas station, like literally, because they don't even know. And that's no knock on them, because it's a privilege to fly at our school. And part of that privilege is paying an X amount of dollars to have a line service.
Right. And they don't know how to fly to another airport, shut down, tie it down to get lunch.
Tie it down. So you make a great point about the drip, because...
But that's all things that's like, whatever. But the imprint of an aircraft in a hangar tells a story.
Oh, it tells a mojo story.
What mojo story?
We always can tell if she's leaking or not.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I mean. Yes.
It makes it even easier, because then you can go inspect, like, where is that leak coming from? We have an old airplane. We've talked about that. All of the... I am not a mechanic. All of the, not oil, but we have the little.
I can't help you because I don't know where you're going. Like, tell me where you're driving to. Like, I'll tell you the exit.
Why can't I think of the word? I had it there. Like the hinges, like how you oil them to make them not as.
Grease?
Yeah, grease. Oh my gosh. So we have all the grease holes in Mojo, and it's so easy for someone to just come by and maybe see a drip underneath the engine compartment, but we know our airplane, and there's a little grease hole underneath the fuel sump, and it will drip every now and again. It's just grease.
Right, but also, yeah, it's just... It's seeing a drip of red fluid next to the wheel. It's seeing a drip of blue fluid under the wing. It tells a story when it's in a hangar. So that's something to really take away from this story, is that your pre-flight should include more than the aircraft. It should include the ground around it.
It is. One of our good friends has a very large YouTube channel, and I was literally watching a video yesterday, and his wife has this thing that she holds near and dear about flight school planes, and you don't know that story. You don't know what just happened to that plane. You don't know if you're the maintenance flight. You don't know if it just had an oil change, which that does not mean to scare you. What we want to reiterate is that whoever this is, did an excellent job of pre-flighting.
Excellent.
Like, that's the point I'm trying to make. I fly a flight school plane every single day. So, like, don't take that as a knock, but you don't know that story. And it's so important when we're trying to make PIC decisions on whether this plane is airworthy or fit to fly or not. And
yeah. If there's any chief pilots of flight schools listening, I'll say one thing about what you just mentioned that I loved that Embry-Riddle did. And if you guys are listening and are pilots, you guys know what Embry-Riddle is. If you're not, Embry-Riddle is the university that me and Kevin both graduated from. That's where I learned how to fly. And they are an exceptionally professional flight school. And part of that is a maintenance book in the back seat that lived in the aircraft. It had to be there. And after every flight, the instructor would notate any squawks, whether it be airworthiness, cosmetic, anything that's wrong with the plane goes in the book. If it's an airworthiness item, then they would report it when they walked inside, like, hey, this plane's down for this, whatever. But then as the next pilot, so when I would show up to a plane that they taught us, the first thing you do is look in the maintenance book because they run, I don't know, 100 aircraft there.
Yeah.
So they, maybe they miss something. So maybe there was a report of a squawk that never got addressed. Well, how do the next people know? Well, they wouldn't unless they looked at this book or that the book existed. So then I would open the book and I would say, oh, alternator two, I see that that failed on the last flight, or the alternator failed on the last flight. And then a couple lines up, I see it failed. And both times it, there's a column to say maintenance. They sign it, a signature, and then they say what they did to remedy it. Repaired alternator or replaced alternator or whatever. If there's no signature, it was never addressed. So if I got to the book and next to alternator failure, there was nothing, then I'd be like, oh, they've never fixed this plane. I'm not going to fly it. But even if they did fix it, what a story, right? Because here I am, let's say about to go on an IFR flight, and I see that the alternator has failed twice in the last 2 weeks because of this book. Been repaired. But without that book, I would never know. And I'd be departing into IMC weather, totally clueless that this plane is having alternator problems. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't or shouldn't go do it, but would my eyes be lasered onto that alternator during my run-up and my checks just to be certain that the alternator is working before I go? Yes.
Chief pilots and director of flight ops, listen to this lady. Put the damn book in the back that's and teach your instructors and clients to write in it. I love it. The story, I love that. I we just should run with that. Like, the story is so important.
Yes, I remember that. For example, I remember one of the Skyhawks, a common one in this particular Skyhawk I was flying all the time, was having co-pilot door problems that it was popping off on takeoff all the time, and they kept fixing it. But it's like, oh, before I take off, I know that the co-pilot door is having an issue, so I'm going to be certain that it's closed and locked, and then I'm also going to be prepared for it to pop open on takeoff and not lose my shit if it happens.
Absolutely.
Without that maintenance book in the back that's totally not required, would never know and put a pilot in a potential unsafe situation, right? Because now they have no idea that this plane's door's been popping open several times. They get in, go take off, pops open, veer off the runway, whatever. You know, like something bad could happen. But if they were prepared for that to happen, which I know we should be prepared for anything to happen, but like, my God, more information is better than none.
Man, I love this. Like, when we pre-flight, we want to create a story. I love that. Find the story of the airplane, because that will help when, especially for you guys learning out there, why are you pre-flighting? Hopefully your instructors have, you know, kind of explained what's so important and everything, but really creating your own story of this airplane on how I can determine if it's safe to fly.
Right. Because like with our own plane, we have our own mental notes about it. We don't have a maintenance book in the back with stuff like this, but we know our plane like the back of our hand.
No one else touched it.
It's our airplane. No one else is flying it. We know when's been, stuff's been fixed, what's been happening with it. But a flight school plane, it's a stranger. Stranger danger.
So, I love that. This is a great story.
Or suggest, if you're not a director of a flight school, suggest this to your chief pilot or your director. It will make your operations so much safer.
Yeah. Well, thank you for submitting that, because like a lot of these stories we tell are usually are funny and they're bad. I think that this is a great, great story. Like, because sometimes we need some of these on the podcast to show like it's okay to can a flight. You literally said this to me yesterday. Like it was windy, or it's been windy here like crazy. And I was like, should I just text my customer and tell him we're not going to fly? And
oh, but what was your reason? You were trying to weather out his solo because it was too windy.
Correct.
And you said he lives over an hour from the airport. Should I give him the heads up that we're probably going to cancel his solo before he comes to the airport? And what did I say? And people might think that I'm an a-hole, but
you said, it is so much more important for the learning experience to have to put yourself in that pressure situation where you want to do this solo, where you want to get this flight time, where you want to prove to yourself and have to cancel it in the moment.
Those are the hardest learning lessons because it's, you can't create those opportunities as a flight instructor. They just happen. And I think if he had called you before he made the drive and said, hey, the weather doesn't look good, I'm going to cancel. Sure. Great. But if he didn't reach out to you and you were wondering, should you as the instructor be proactive? Hell no. He should show up, drive the hour, look at the weather too late and be like, oh, that's a good learning thing. Next time before I leave the house, I'm going to look at the weather. That's a good learning opportunity. But also, like you just said, I said, it's really hard to cancel flights when you want to fly and he just drove an hour to be there. The pressure is on. And these high pressure moments when you really want to go and you just drove a freaking hour to get to the airport, those are the hardest flights to cancel and the biggest lessons to learn.
Correct. Let me close the loop. He actually ended up going.
Yeah. So good thing he didn't cancel it.
Because he showed up prepared. I was kind of shocked. I got to be honest, because there was no way he was going, because I've trained this kid a long time and no knock, he usually does not come in prepared. And guess what? He already looked at the weather prior, and then he came in with his pitch to me on why he was capable, and it was in his limitations to go fly. And he used that word. He's like, on your solo limitation, it says 20 knots.
I love it.
It's forecasted at 18. And I said, I can't argue with that.
I love it.
And he went. And he had a great time.
I think that that's really awesome. Really, really awesome. Well, now we're at our newest segment of the show, our advice section. I love seeing the advice ones come through. So keep submitting these in. Do you want to read it?
Did you read it? Oh, no, I'll read it. Because this one is going to be for you. Because this is hard for me. I'm just kidding. We're photos. All right. It's December with 1,500 foot ceilings and some light rime ice is being reported. Your IFR check ride is today. Oral was already done on a previous day. And you need to fly 15 miles from your home airport to the designated pilot examiner. You've been in contact with the designated pilot examiner, and he is fine to do the check ride if you can get there. You decide to wait it out because your personal minimums are 2,000 feet. The day does not improve, and it's getting to the point of making a decision. You're comfortable making the flight, but you would need to violate your personal minimums just to get there. Another pilot at the airport offers to ride with you and wait for your check ride. What would you do? This is a true story, and I'll pause while you discuss and let you know below what I did. Why did I read that part? Okay.
No, I think they put that on purpose. They didn't want us to read what they did, but read that sentence again because you laughed through it.
What would you do? This is a true story. I'll pause while you discuss and let you know below what I did.
Yeah, so no, this makes sense. They wanted us to discuss it, and then we're going to read what the decision they made without us knowing.
So my first question, and I think I need a little bit more, is what's the weather at your airport where you're doing your exam?
Well, we're going to assume it's 1,500-foot ceilings both places. They're 15 miles apart.
So then the answer is it has to be, you cannot do this. And I know this because I send students to check rides and the examiner asks you, what are your personal limitations? This happened recently with a student. It was windy out. And I remember the student asking me, like, what, can you give me a pie wrap? And I was like, it's actually really smooth and you're more than capable. But he told me that his limitations are 15 knots of crosswind. Guess what? The crosswind was at 16 knots. The examiner asked him, what is your limitations? And I told him, you cannot do this check ride if you tell the examiner your limitations 15 knots and it's actually 16 knots.
Well, what's your thoughts if you don't share that information with the examiner? They said that their personal minimums is 2,000, but they didn't say they disclosed that to the examiner.
I don't see why you wouldn't do this, because it's an instrument check ride, assuming, and I shouldn't make an assumption, but assuming the other pilot is an IFR current and capable pilot to be a safety pilot with you, to me, that does not seem like that big of a red flag.
Okay, why does the IFR rated need to be in the mix?
Because anytime the ceilings are at 1,500 feet, you know, a little bit more pause. I don't know where they are. Did it say where they are in the world?
They said it's December and there's light rime reported.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change your decision?
I did miss the rime. Okay.
Rime is icing, by the way. That's a type of ice. And in trainer aircraft, they are not certified to fly in ice.
Okay. I missed the icing report. So you're giving yourself a very small window. If we're going to follow the FARs to our check ride, I'm assuming this is probably over a populated area. So you can't really be too high, can you? So you're going to be right up on it. And as we experienced the other day, we started getting icing on our wheels and VFR conditions.
Yep.
Because it's humid out and it was freezing. So,
well, yeah.
Let me backtrack.
Okay.
With the ice, I for some reason missed that.
Okay.
I mean, the answer is easy. If you're flying an airplane that's not BKI certified, what are you going to do?
Well, their intention is obviously to fly over VFR at 1,000 feet, which in most airspace, you need to be 500 feet below the ceiling, right? And if it's at 1,500 feet, that puts you at 1,000. And as you mentioned, you need to be 1,000 feet above the ground legally in most places and to be safe. Like, that's like the minimum you want to be at. So you have not a 1 foot of wiggle room.
We call it Swiss cheese model, the right. Dominoes. As you keep talking, I see those dominoes falling over. Because,
well, I'm slowly changing your mind. I can tell you you said originally, I don't know why you want to do this.
Because I missed the December icing thing.
It's because you were thinking that they could go VFR. And if they were with an IFR pilot, if they needed to go into the clouds,
yes,
they could.
That's what I was thinking. Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
But with icing being in the clouds, now you're back to that wouldn't help.
Right? No. I was thinking if you were with an IFR pilot who was current, they could send you up.
Here's my thing. Why are we considering doing an IFR check ride in icing? Why are we considering this flight in the first place? For me, it's not about the flight to the DPE.
Sure.
It's not about it.
Sure.
It's about the goal is to do a check ride. The oral's already done. So you're not even going just to knock out the oral, right? You're going to go fly and do an IFR. You will be flying an IMC. So if you know that that's on the table and you said that you're waiting it out and the weather wasn't getting any better, how are we suspecting to complete an IFR check ride in IMC with reported icing?
Yeah, I really missed that part.
That part is what's getting me. Like, I think you can make a 15-mile flight over. I do. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I don't like that it's different than your personal minimums, but I understand that we can flex on minimums. Those can change.
Getting your IFR rating, I think that...
But
you can make this happen. The icing is what.
But you're already questioning the flight. That's a 5-minute flight to the DPE. You're already questioning that. How are we going to complete an IFR check ride flight in the clouds where there's icing? Like, to me, that's immediately telling the DPE by making the flight that you're not prepared to take the check ride because you're deciding to take a check ride in icing.
All right, so we need more backstory too because the airplane matters. We could be saying this and it could be in a Cirrus. Like, it could be in a Cirrus. Because
would you recommend any of your students to go on an IFR check ride in icing conditions even if the aircraft was equipped?
No, but I don't know where they are in the world. What if this is what they practice? That's my only question. I get that on the broad surface level, this seems with icing, it's a firm no. But if this student, let's assume it's in a Cirrus, so it's FIKI certified and they have practice.
What's the intention of FIKI certification on a piston aircraft?
To get out of it.
And what's the intention of an IFR check ride?
To stay in it. Well, especially if it's 1,500 foot ceilings, you're going to be in it the entire time.
Exactly.
For sure. No matter what the layer is.
FIKI is not sustained icing. What does the POH say on a SR22 Fiki equipped when you encounter icing conditions?
It tells you to flip on the Fiki. It tells you to get out. It
tells you to get out. The POH says get out of the icing, right?
Correct.
So we're back to square one, aren't we?
It's interesting. The reason I have some reservations here, because there is a school that I went to and this situation happens at that school all the time, especially the school was in Ohio in wintertime and they do check rides. I've done a check ride through IMC and there might have been some icing, but I was in a Fiki equipped plane, mind you. And I was
your multi
as CFI double I stuff. Mm-hmm. But this is an instrument student.
An hour and a half of flying at minimum, an hour and a half in IMC.
Yeah. Not the icing part. It's the icing part.
Okay.
I just feel like.
Let's see what they did.
All right.
We've talked this
through. I think I already know the answer what they did.
I just looked at it.
But I already knew the answer. I knew what they did because. Part of me says that you're right because I don't know all the situations. I'm going to go and say before I read this.
Based on our information.
Before I read what they did, I'm going to assume they're in a Fiki certified airplane. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make that assumption because if not, then I can't even understand what we're talking about. Right? Right?
Right. I just, with the limited information we have, and this isn't a knock and who submitted with this information, I would say no.
Fair. All right. So I think we all know where this is going. I took the pilot up on his offer and flew to the DPE. The DPE filed an IFR flight plan and we conducted the exam. We landed at the conclusion of the exam with some light rime ice and a new instrument rating.
And there you have it.
There you have it.
Congratulations.
Great experience. My point is I cannot think of an examiner that would violate an FAR on examination. So this airplane must have been a Cirrus or a Diamond or something with Fiki.
That would
let us know because this changes the story.
Changes the story. It makes me understand the decision, but I still stand behind my no.
I can see the examiner doing this if you're there. Also, you flying to them, I get why the examiner said, if you can get to me, I can see that happening all day. There's tons of examiners that would do the check ride knowing they're in a Fiki equipped airplane and they've done their weather briefing. The student has proved like, okay, there's icing just right here. I could see that happening all day.
Also, this examiner kind of sucks that they're 15 miles away and they want to drive to them.
Yeah.
They made them fly to them 15 miles away.
Yeah. And I also know that some examiners don't like to file an IFR flight plan on an IFR check ride.
Yes.
They don't like doing that.
Yes, because that does box you in on what you can do on a truly IMC day, that you have less flexibility and control over what the controllers are going to clear you for. But I am surprised. You're right. There must have been, it must have been a Fiki plane, because if it wasn't a Fiki plane, how would you pass an exam picking up icing that was forecasted?
You'd
fail, right? And they wouldn't even let you go, hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, examiners aren't perfect, but if it wasn't a Fiki equipped plane, woof. It must have been.
Mini space. Woof. We're going to assume it's Fiki. And let me just throw this in here. If I lived wherever you are and I had an instrument student, I would do this routinely. We would do this flight all the time if I had a Fiki equipped plane, 100%.
Do we properly explain what Fiki is real quick? Because we've said it so much.
Fiki is flight into known icing. So not all airplanes can fly in icing conditions, right? Known icing conditions.
So these planes have a system on them that allows you to either remove ice from the aircraft or prevent ice from the aircraft. So in either situation, they can be certified as a Fiki plane, as we're calling it. And yeah, most trainer planes are not Fiki equipped, though.
Now, I'd say the last 3 weeks, I've taken a lot of my students into icing, into known icing that are working on private license or instrument license. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's abnormal to train in icing if you have an equipped airplane and you have outs. Because like we said, we don't have enough information. The icing layer could have been at 1500 feet and true, it could have been, true. It could have been fine above like that. True.
Maybe it was 1500 foot ceilings and the cloud layer was only 500 feet thick.
Yeah. This story has a lot of open holes.
I like that though.
Yeah.
Fun.
It was fun. I mean, let us know what type of plane it was. We don't know who you are.
No, this was fun. This was really fun. This was a great thing to submit. I really loved that. And great job. Obviously, you crushed it on your IFR track ride. So awesome, awesome job. I assume you're talking about this past December. So really great job. Congrats on your instrument rating. I really strongly suggest to all of our pilots listening, if you're a private pilot, to get your instrument rating. It's really helpful to you in the safety of your flight. So awesome job getting that done.
Well, thank you all for the submissions and the advice section. As always, keep the reviews coming. Keep the submissions coming. We will be back next Wednesday with a merch giveaway. So keep an ear out and like and subscribe.
Bye.
Thanks for flying with Captain John Doe. If you have a story to share, visit CaptainJohnDoe.com and stay anonymous. New episodes every Wednesday. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and tell your favorite crew members.